Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for August the 5th, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. We have two major segments in our show tonight. First, we have a series of short interviews made by the VA about the experiences of veterans in dealing with post-traumatic stress and related problems. And then in our second segment, we have VA news from Washington and around the country. But first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David. How are you tonight? And good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's doing well. I would like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, so if you'd like to know what's going on in your mind, you know, give us a call. Our toll-free number is, and it's in the United States, 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Before we get to the first part of our show, though, I just want to throw this out to some of our veterans. I kind of stuttered there in the beginning only because I got a lot on my mind. It's been a week since we've been on the show last, and during this week, I've been working on countless number of veterans' cases. And I got to tell you, the errors and the problems that I'm encountering is becoming more, not less. And I do have a contact within the VA that I use quite often to help me with cases and try to settle cases. And he tells me the same thing. I mean, his own experiences is that he finishes up on a case and he assumes the case is now going to the his coach to be authorized and then off to the finance department so our veterans can be paid within the next 60, maybe 90 days, only to find out that the coach never authorized it, never got to finance, and now it's been 5 or 6 months and the veteran still hasn't gotten paid. That's one issue that he addresses. And we still have the problem with the mailing system. You know, the fact is that I probably get 60 to 70% of the mail that my veterans get, I get. The other 30 to 40% remains at the VA, and although they say I was CC'd on it, I don't get CC'd on it. Again, and we still have the issue of deadlines. I bring all this to the attention of our veterans because these are real problems that affect you. They affect, you know, your ability to be compensated. It affects our ability to trust the VA system to begin with. We all know that it's a flawed system, but when you can no longer trust the system, you've got a lot of problems. So I'm telling you, veterans out there, please, please, please be aware of what's going on with your case, whether you have a DAV, a VSO, or an attorney. You know, you are your best advocate, and it's very important that you stay on top of your case the entire time that it's being processed through the VA system, because you're going to have issues, you're going to have errors, and it's going to affect the ultimate outcome for your case. So if you're not staying on top of it, shame on you. So, you know, and tonight, if there's any veterans out there that are listening and you have problems, you know, with your cases, I'd like to hear about them. I'm sure David would like to hear about them. You know, I know what I encounter. Let me tell you, let me hear from some of you veterans to find out what you encounter. And that number, again, is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. You know, let us know what's going on with your case. So back to our first segment, the VA's, I want to thank the VA's online program called Make the Connection. It's available on YouTube and other social media platforms. We will hear from three veterans about their experiences dealing with the effects of their military service, as well as how they coped with making the transition from military to civilian life. First, we're going to hear from Ryan, a U.S. Army veteran and his VA counselor, Melissa. Ryan had a difficult time transitioning from the service, But with the help of guidance and professional support provided by Melissa, he was able to go back to school and graduate. Doug, please roll take number one.
My name is Ryan. I served in the United States Army for 12 years. I did 3 tours in Afghanistan and 1 in Iraq.
My name is Melissa. I'm a counselor at the VA.
I got out in 2011. I found myself going through a divorce, homeless, jobless, purposeless. It kind of went in phases as far as how I dealt with it. Phase one was a lot of self-medication. In my case, it was usually through alcohol. Phase two is, man, that's a really bad idea. I'm going to go get help. So then it's doctor-prescribed medication. So that certainly helped. Phase three and four is just getting back to a truly healthy lifestyle. My girlfriend, I was talking to her, and she had said, I'm getting ready to go to Eastern Michigan University. They gave me, you know, this course outline. I think it sounds like what it is you're saying you want to do with your life.
You had an idea of what you wanted to do, and you knew where you wanted to go to school for that, but it was that, how do I then turn that into a career after I complete the degree?
The program I did to go to school was vocational rehabilitation. And I got a phone call one day saying, hey, my name is Melissa. I just wanted to let you know I'm your new voc rehab counselor. And the timely fashion and the amount of communication that Melissa had with me was the start of, this lady's not playing around. I need to make sure I'm at least matching her effort.
As a rehabilitation counselor, my job is to help the veteran identify what their unique strengths are and abilities, and then try to help them plug that into a career path. And what we do is we identify that job that they want, and then we work our way backwards from there. And my role is to identify all the different services that the veteran might need in order to reach that potential.
I didn't need a lot of accommodations, but I had a little memo that I gave to all of my professors that said, if I choose to sit in the back of the class when I might normally sit up front, don't say anything to him about it. Leave it alone. He's sitting there for a reason. If there's a test coming up, make sure he knows about it so that I can go sit in a quiet room with a proctor and nobody else around, because I do have test anxiety.
Yeah, it's more about working smarter instead of working harder and getting a level playing field to compensate for the aspects of the disability that create that limitation.
By the time I got to Eastern, I felt like my head was mostly screwed on straight. But there were still a lot of rough times even then. One of my guys had committed suicide. There were a lot of struggles, and sometimes I just needed to vent. Melissa is absolutely great. She would say, okay, are you actually looking for a solution to try and figure out how to approach this? Yeah, I am. She would go through with me. To this day, when I think about where I was and where I am now, it brings me to tears. I wish I would have had somebody like me that was willing to turn around and reach back and be like, hey, I've already been there, been through that. Let me help you up.
As a human being, we need to have something that we can connect to that connects us to other people. And I think when you were at your most lost, it was when you had the least amount of connections. Having somewhere to go, something to do, and then have it on top of all that be something really meaningful is, I think, what led you to where you are today more than anything.
There's a lot of people along the way that have contributed to me being where I am.
And we're here and we want to help. We're ready to help. It's just takes that step.
You got to be willing to ask for help.
I think it's wonderful that Ryan was willing to share his story, and it's nice to hear from VA counselor Melissa sharing her perspectives, and also, you know, kind of putting the human touch to the VA. We often think of the VA as sort of a faceless impersonal bureaucracy, because sometimes it seems that way. Very often it can seem that way. But it's good to see that the VA does have vocational training programs to help veterans make that transition from the service and with success, and the importance of reaching out and getting that help. What do you think, Rick?
I thought it was very good. Some of the things that I kind of triggered here was she mentioned having some connection. You know, I think it is important, and David, you know this better than I do because you are a veteran as well. You know, when you leave the service, you need to have some connection in going into civilian life. She also talked about having something meaningful. Again, you know, you're leaving the service, leaving a place that you spend 4, 6, 10, maybe longer years of your life, and then you just get dropped into the civilian world. It can be pretty scary. So, you know, getting that connection and finding something meaningful obviously can be very helpful. It was in this veteran's case. And then the last thing he said, and we hear it all the time when we play these audio tapes and when I interview my own clients, you know, this concept of asking for help, you have to do that, you know. You did it when you were in the service, you know. Yeah, you asked for help because you might be new, so you asked for help how to figure out how to get along in the service. So when you're in civilian life, ask for help. So why don't you give us the next tape there, Doug?
Thanks. Yeah, the next we're going to hear from an Army veteran named Katrina. After she lost her roommate while serving in the Army, Katrina had a tough time adjusting to civilian life. She began isolating herself from others and feeling very stressed. She started having flashbacks at that point, and she knew it was time to get help. So let's listen how her vet center was able to help Katrina open up to her family and make some progress. So, Doug, if you'll roll the second tape, please.
My name is Katrina. I served in the Army from 2002 to 2005, and I was a 92 Yankee Unit Supply Specialist. My first week back was really difficult because when I deployed to Iraq, I had a roommate, and when I came back from Iraq, I did not anymore. She was killed overseas. And one of the hardest things that I had to go through was, you know, that glorious day when you get all your stuff back out of storage and you try to start over, you know. They brought all my stuff, but then they started bringing all of her stuff. And that was hard. It's those little things that you didn't think, I guess you can't really prepare for. But as far as the transition, I didn't want to go out grocery shopping. And I thought it was perfectly normal to go grocery shopping at 11 o'clock at night when the store was still open. And, you know, I just thought, I don't want to deal with people, you know. But I think that's easier to say than, you know, I feel anxious in public right now. You know, I'm overwhelmed with all these people around me. It's too busy. You know, I don't think that's easy to acknowledge or say about yourself. In 2005 to 2000, I think 7 or 8 was when I finally did have my first flashback. I didn't even know what a flashback was. I didn't know much of any of that, but I knew I had to talk to professionals. And so that's what I did. I reached out to a vet center in my area. As you reach out and as you talk to these specialists, these therapists, these counselors, or church support groups, what you learn is it's okay to not be okay. You just have to acknowledge what are the stressors, or just acknowledge that you have stress. Sometimes I waste time trying to figure out what is it that's bothering me, but sometimes I just need, hey, I'm bothered, I need to talk to somebody now. If you really are trying to utilize the VA or the vet centers or church resources, you have to be honest. These are my shortcomings right now. This is what's an issue right now. And they've always been able to not let me walk around or dance around the issues. You know, they know. They know what they're doing. And then on top of that, being a law enforcement officer, they know the stresses that I still am undergoing. And sometimes they're connected, sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's just you're not taking care of yourself, and you need to hear that. My family, they understand. They don't push. They don't love me any less or treat me any different. There's nothing wrong with needing help. It's best to utilize everything and anything available that's going to make you a better person rather than feel like you're alone and feel like you're going crazy or feel like you're damaged and beyond repair, because you're not. We can only get better when we acknowledge that we need that help. And there are plenty of people out there that are waiting to talk to you and help you and give you that guidance that you need to become healthy in all aspects of your life.
Well, thanks Katrina. Go ahead, Rick.
No, that was very good. Thanks to Katrina for sharing her story. You know, one of the things that I kind of focused on was when she said, it's okay not to be okay. You know, I think a lot of people can say that. You know, we all go through stuff, and people come back from serving their country, obviously go through a lot of trauma. So it's okay not to be okay. And then, as Katrina says, you know, just reach out, you know, just like the audio before us, you know, reach out and ask for help. So these are valuable lessons. Back to you, David.
And I think that the toughest thing for most that have served in the military is that from the very beginning, from your initial training, but then throughout the military, just through continual kind of the culture of the military and reinforcement, is that your point, Rick, and what Katrina said is about that it's okay not to be okay, is that that's really, that thought, it sounds like common sense and obvious, but it's really quite contrary to what is kind of the culture of the military, where people are expected, and they expect of themselves that they can't not be okay. They always have to be ahead of a problem. They always have to be on top of a problem. They always have to be accomplishing the mission first. And one of the core values in the Air Force, which is where I served, the three core values were, you know, integrity first, excellence, and service before self. And when you hear that over and over again, and it's not brainwashing, it's just part of the culture, that service before self, think about what that ends up doing. It puts everything else before that person's own own best interest sometimes, you know. In any event, so that's kind of, in my view, that kind of explains how a lot of veterans get to the point where they're at. And so it's good to hear from these veterans. It's also good to hear that the VA, whether it's Ryan, the Army veteran, talking about the vocational training, or Melissa talking about the vet centers, and there's vet centers around the country. They're easy to find. Just go to va.gov and look for locations. But in addition to the vet center, Rick and I, because we've talked to a lot of people, we've met a lot of people that have private organizations, whether it's Camp Hope in Houston, Texas, or Vets Helping Vets in Marion County in Ocala, Florida. But around the country, there are, countless number of private organizations. And then there's also, every state, and even, let's say, in the state of Florida, even at the county level, there are government-sponsored veteran support organizations. So there's so many resources out there. It's quite an investment in time and energy and expertise, which is good. So, Rick, why don't we introduce the third?
Next we're going to hear from Ed. Ed's a U.S. Army veteran. He developed problems with drugs while in the service. So in this next interview, Ed and his daughter, Jasmine, talk about how mental health treatment helped him get his life back on track. Please, Doug.
My name is Ed. I served in the Army, 82nd Airborne. And this from the years 1985 to 1988.
I'm Jasmine, and as my dad.
I was an infantry in the military, and you know, my job was jumping on airplanes and walking constantly. You know, when I was in there, I had a couple of tragedies happen to my family. My big sister passed away. Something happened. I just wasn't myself, and I messed around, and I indulged in some things that wasn't good as being a soldier. So they told me I couldn't re-enlist. Once I got out of the military, my substance abuse history just it expanded. It was terrible. I didn't have any life. I would wreck families. I would get with one girl, think we're gonna have a life together. I would end up leaving.
He was in and out of my life. Every weekend, me and my sister would be outside waiting on Dad. Like, when his dad come in, sometimes he came, sometimes he didn't. Even though he was barely there, we still look forward to see him every weekend. Every time he comes, he drop us off, we cry for like 2 days. I didn't really know about his drug addiction. My mom would put it in my ear, like, your dad's doing drugs. I'm like, no, he's not. He's my hero. And then it was true. He'll isolate himself from everybody. Like, he'll be quiet. I called him, leave him messages. He wouldn't answer. I didn't want to talk to him anymore for a while because of the drug abuse.
I was actually homeless. I was living in Arizona, homeless. It was 1,000,000 degrees. I had no contact with any of my family members. So I was living on 32nd Street in Van Buren behind Circle K. And that was my entire existence. I just didn't want to be here. Some guy with a blue outreach jacket on saw me. I had on some cut-up BDU shorts. And he asked me, was I a veteran? You know, and this was like in 2008. And he took me to some place. It was a transitional housing facility. They connected me with mental health providers, substance abuse counselors, and stuff like that. And next thing you know, my life started to grow. I went to school for a little bit. I get back into the workforce. I started going to different meetings for substance abuse and stuff like that. And I started making amends to these people. And they started accepting me back. You know, I would go to Chicago and apologize to all those family members that I let down.
He called me out of the blue one day. I was actually shocked to get a call from him. And he pretty much just apologized. He said it was the drugs, and he just apologized. That's all I wanted was an apology. And so after the apology, we began to talk every day. And then I just decided to come out here with him to Arizona.
Next thing you know, I got my life back. All those families and kids that I abandoned, they are now a part of my life.
He's just more outgoing and friendly.
I pay their phone bills.
Yeah, he's financially stable. And I don't know, he's just a different person. Like, he just brings so much positive energy in the whole room. And so I'm really proud of him, how far he's come.
I'm in a program where my ninth step says I have to make amends to those who I have caused wrong. And my amends to my children is just a lifetime amends. I have to be there when they need me. And that's what I show up. When they call me, I'm going to show up.
He does.
I want everyone to know that no matter what you're going through, maybe you have an issue with substance abuse or being an addict or a mental health or PTSD, schizoaffective, all those things. Don't let those labels dictate who you are. Go out and seek professional help. I do it on a regular basis, and my life has become extraordinary.
The advice that I suggest is if you just work hard, maintain everything, just, you know, stay positive, and then you can overcome anything. We've overcome a lot. He's my best friend now.
I love you, baby girl.
I love you.
Well, that was a great story by Ed. You know, this kind of hits home with me. He's talking about basically getting into the program. In his case, it was NA, Narcotics Anonymous. And he didn't really go through the VA program here, but he found NA. And NA or AA are both great sources of help for veterans. I know this month I'll be celebrating 12 years in AA, and I can tell you what it's done for my life. And listening to Ed talk, I can kind of, he's almost like a brother, listening to the things he's saying about making amends to his family and his friends, and how he's gotten his life back. That is just so true. You know, they say in both NA and AA program that the gifts of the promises. You can't even imagine what's on the other side of addiction. So any veteran that's out there that's got a substance abuse problem, or even a gambling problem, that's another big addiction. You know, search out your local community. I know in St. Pete, for instance, there are 689 AA meetings a day.
Wow.
In Hillsborough County, there's just under 600 meetings a day. Think about that, David. A day, not a week, but a day. So, I'm sure, if you're in St. Pete, you can almost go to any street corner and you're going to find a meeting, whether it's in the morning, at lunchtime, or in the evening. But there's another source for our veterans. We see it all the time, our veterans that have substance abuse problems. So if you can't get help through the VA or some of these other programs that are out there, just find an AA meeting. And you can Google that as well. They're all listed throughout Google. One of the other things he said, which is so apropos, is now that he's got his life back, he's just showing up for his family, showing up for his friends. And he's able to show up now because he's in the program and is getting help through the program. He sounded so happy. That's another thing I kind of took from listening to that audio. He sounded relieved. He sounded happy. And, again, some more gifts of the program. So that was a great one there. David, what do you think?
Well, it is interesting. Ed had mentioned he was homeless. He was living behind a Circle K at 32nd Street in Van Buren in Phoenix, which I know that general area. I was stationed out in the Phoenix area for a couple of years. And he said, it was like a million degrees. I can only imagine how rough it must have been being homeless, in Arizona summertime, probably constantly looking for some air conditioning just to escape the heat. But fortunately for him, he mentioned that someone from a veteran outreach program, and he didn't mention specifically which one it was, but that had met him and saw that he was wearing, BDU cutoff shorts and asked him if he was a veteran. He said yes. That was in 2008. But the sad thing was that he had not run into anyone before then, or perhaps he had not thought that there were resources out there and that he could have turned to, and maybe he just needed someone to extend the helping hand, to invite him to it. You never know, but fortunately for him that outreach program did exist. And for him, it sounds like he was very successful. I know, that for some people and veterans, it's not an easy journey. And there are a lot of relapses, a lot of problems, and it's a lifelong thing. And it's just a matter of always continuing to try to keep pedaling forward. But fortunately, like I say, there are a lot of programs. Rick, like you said, just in the Tampa Bay area of Florida, literally hundreds of meetings every day for those with alcohol or substance abuse issues. But like you also said, half of it is just showing up. That, that'll ring true to veterans, because most people that serve in the military know, that the starting point is you got to show up. You got to show up on time too, obviously, but it's a big thing in the military. But first step is you just got to show up. If you're not there, nothing's going to happen. So we want to encourage veterans to take that step. Go ahead, Rick.
One of the things that any veteran that's listening to this that might be thinking about an AA or an NA meeting, you don't need to go in there and do anything spectacular. You just show up and put your butt in the seat and just listen. And you can do that for as long as you want. No one's ever going to pressure you to sit there and divulge your story or get into your situation unless you want to. There's no pressure. When you go into one of those meetings, there's absolutely no pressure to perform. Just sit back, go get yourself a cup of coffee. They usually have Danish up there. And just sit back and listen. Listen to the stories that are being told around the room. And probably, half the stories you hear are going to resonate with you, and you're going to all of a sudden realize that you are in the right spot. So, just Just get into the room. That's the first step, like David just said and I said earlier, just showing up and getting into that room. And I guarantee you, if you do that often enough, on a regular basis, every day, you know, one of the things that I do when I counsel people when it comes to NA or AA situations, and I do it with my veterans too, because I run into a lot of veterans that are my clients who've got substance abuse issues. And, you know, I tell them 90 meetings, 90 days. And that means 90 meetings, 90 days consecutively, not when you want. You know, if it's a holiday, don't say, well, I'm going to take today off. Nope. You know, you go 90 meetings, 90 days. And I think for the most part, you'll find that that experience will start to transcend you into helping you get on with your life in a positive way. So nice to see that Ed, using what we call the 12-step program. You know, David, you mentioned the Camp Hope out in Houston. Well, that's a
yes.
Spiritual-based. That's a spiritual-based 12-step program camp, generally for veterans suffering with PTSD. But they use the 12-step program and the spiritual-based foundation of the 12-step program to help veterans. And we've had veterans on the show who've been to Camp Hope. I've been to Camp Hope myself, and I see how it works and the success that it does have. So, you know, that 12-step program for our veterans, you don't need to go to Camp Hope. You can just go to a meeting in your local community, and you can get the 12-step program right there and then. You don't even need to go to the VA. If you've soured on the VA and you don't trust the VA because of all the stories you've heard from friends, don't worry about it. Just go to an AA or an NA meeting and start there. So start your journey. Show up for your journey. Because you have, for most of you veterans, you have a long life ahead of you. But you got to lick the issues that you have that may probably have been caused by the experience of service. So back to you, David.
That's great insight, Rick. Thanks for sharing that and offering your advice too. And I'd like to again thank the VA for their Make the Connection program, which provides these interviews through social media. Interviews with these veterans and family members and VA employees talk about their experiences and hopefully serve as encouragement to others. So why don't we go to our second segment tonight, which is our news segment. Rick, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. In a VA press release from this past Friday, August 2nd, VA announced that it has cured 100,000 veterans of hepatitis C, establishing VA as a global leader in the diagnosis and treatment of HIV. HCV infection can lead to advanced liver disease, ALD, liver cancer, and early death. Curing HCV can prevent the development of progression of ALD, cutting death rates by up to 50%. Until recently, HCV treatment required medications to be taken daily by mouth and weekly by injection for up to a year, with cure rates as low as 35%. Additionally, this treatment had disabling medical and psychiatric side effects, which caused over half of patients to stop treatment prematurely. These efforts have been noting short of life-saving for tens of thousands of veterans, and that's precisely why VA has made diagnosing, treating, and curing hepatitis C virus infection such a priority, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. In 2014, highly effective, less toxic, all-oral, direct-acting antiviral DAAs became available for HCV treatment. These new drugs have few and less severe side effects and can be given as one pill a day for as little as 8 weeks, revolutionizing HCV treatment. VA adopted use of these new medications within days of FDA approval. Through veteran advocacy, VA leadership, and the support of Congress, VA implemented an aggressive program to treat veterans with HCV who were both willing and able to be treated. This included extensive outreach to all veterans in VA known to have HCV infection and increased testing of those at highest risk for HCV. At the end of 2018, almost 85% of veterans at increased risk for HCV had been tested, compared to 50% for the general U.S. population. At the peak of this effort to rapidly deploy direct-acting antivirals, VA was starting a veteran on HCV treatment every 72 seconds on a typical work day, the rate of almost 2,000 new treatments each week. Currently, fewer than 25,000 veterans in VA care remain to be treated. Because of this historic effort, veterans cured of HCV are estimated to be 72% less likely to develop liver cancer. That's great news. For more information, visit www.hepatitis.va.gov. Again, that's www.hepatitis.va.gov. Over to you, Dave.
That is really great news. I can think of at least three veterans that I've represented over the years who, in the last 5 years, three of them died from liver cancer, which had its source as hepatitis C, who were beyond the point where this new treatment was an option for them. But this is really wonderful news, because hepatitis C is something that has plagued a lot of people, thousands of people, and you often see public service announcements on TV, at least I have, and other places, that the baby boomer generation seems to be disproportionately faced with hepatitis C infections. There are different reasons for that, but whatever the specific reason in a person's case, it's a serious disease, and like I say, it can lead to advanced liver disease, liver cancer, and early death. So it's great that the VA is doing this, but it's also amazing that the VA is truly a major leader in the diagnosis and treatment of Hep C. So I just wanted to share that news, get the word out. And again, as Rick said, website is hepatitis.va.gov for more information. Well, moving on to more news of national interest to veterans and their families. There's been publicity in the past that I think it's important to mention again, which is veterans that have a beef against the VA. There's another avenue for them to make a complaint or to seek help, and that's the White House VA hotline, which is now available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. The phone number, if you want to grab your pen and paper, this is the White House VA hotline, is 855. It's a toll-free number, 855-948-2311. White House VA hotline, 855-948-2311. Serves veterans, veterans' families, veteran caregivers, and survivors by giving them a direct non-emergency contact line. Like I say, it's available 24/7, and it's a staffed majority of the people handling those calls are veterans themselves or from a veteran family, and they've been trained to address general and common VA inquiries. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, quote, the White House VA hotline is quickly becoming the VA's front door for questions or concerns about VA and community resources, unquote. The veterans still have many other options as far as contacting the VA, and if you go to va.gov, you'll find that there are many toll-free numbers depending on the particular issue. But those can be very frustrating to deal with, as you know. I've found in calling that some of those numbers myself over the years that it's very difficult. You go through quite a maze just to get to a living human being on those things, and sometimes they're doing nothing more than looking at a computer screen, which doesn't tell the whole story and not entirely helpful. But in any event, the good news is that this White House VA hotline does provide another avenue for veterans to try to communicate their issues. It's been found that more than half of the calls to the hotline are general inquiries about VA care, benefits, memorial services, concerns that cannot be resolved immediately, are then entered as cases accessible to the VA offices of client relations. As of April this year, the most recent period when statistics were available, 94% of the total of just over 157,000 cases had been resolved. and the average wait time to speak to a live person was 9 seconds, with calls typically lasting about 15 minutes. So that's pretty good response time. Again, if you need another avenue to seek attention or help with the VA matter, the White House VA hotline, toll-free is 1-855-948-2311. Back over to you, Rick. Any comments?
David. No, I think it's, you know, I think it's terrific. Lord knows we need as much much opportunity to address the concerns that we have at the VA as we possibly can. I was curious as to what the cases are about, what the complaints are about, and if it's on the compensation side, if it's on the health side. You know, generally speaking, I think the health side, the VA does a pretty good job. We see it on the compensation side that they don't do a good job at all. And, you know, I keep running into more and more problems, more and more veterans who continue to not to get the rating that they deserve to get rated. So we wonder if a lot of these complaints about the compensation side are mentioned on the hotline. Back to you, David.
Yeah, well, thanks. And more news from Washington. The VA and the White House have launched a Veteran Suicide Prevention Task Force, which is important. VA Secretary Robert Wilkie and the Director of the White House Domestic Policy Council, Joe Grogan, have launched a cabinet-level task force to develop a national roadmap to address this issue. It's called the President's Roadmap to Empower Veterans and End the National Tragedy of Suicides, which they have to have an acronym for it, so that spells out the word PREVENTS. That task force will include a community integration and collaboration proposal, a national research strategy, and an implementation strategy. So a lot of planning there, it sounds like, and we'll see what actually happens as a result of that. According to the VA press release, efforts supporting the development of this roadmap are underway and are on target for a March 2020 delivery to the White House. That's still quite a ways away. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, quote, this is a call to action. In order to decrease the rate of veteran suicide, we need to engage our local and community partners in addition to leveraging the resources of the departments. We need an all hands-on-deck approach to preserve the lives of veterans who have served our country. As such, according to Secretary Wilkie, he's thrilled to announce that Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, the founder and president of Give an Hour, has agreed to serve as executive director of the Critical Prevents work. Dr. Van Dalen is widely recognized for changing the culture surrounding mental health and suicide and is an expert and a thought leader in large system change. According to Dr. Wilkie, the VA is proud to have her leading this effort. On March 5th, President Trump had signed an executive order that is directing the VA secretary and the director of the White House Domestic Policy Council to co-chair and get this interagency task force moving. So it's an important issue, and it's not just one affecting veterans. It's a nationwide problem for everyone in the population. It's also a problem for those still on active duty. I was reading an article just this past week about the rate of suicide among active duty Air Force members has been significantly high this year, so much so that the Air Force leaders decided to address it with a kind of a stand-down day throughout the service. That's how serious it is. So it's an ongoing issue, and it's good to see that there's some leadership there. Hopefully it will result in some good implementation and some programs. So, Rick, what are your thoughts?
No, again, anything we can do to help our men and women veterans, I'm all for it. You know, again, there's so many veterans out there that have issues that we need. We need more of this, not less. You know, one of the things that I find very interesting is when I'm sitting in my office and I've got a veteran, and one of the things that I always do is I ask them to tell me their story. And especially the combat veteran, and they start going on and they talk about suicides with the people that they know. And as I'm sitting there, the spouse is sitting over in the other part of the office in a comfortable chair, and her mouth is dropping open, and I look at her and I go, "You haven't heard any of this, have you?" And she just laughs, and not laughs, she goes, "No." And these people have been married for 30 to 35 years. And this veteran's just disclosing this information for the first time. Well, that veteran has been, just had stuff bottled up. And when you bottle something up, it's going to explode somehow, some way. It's going to take some form. And unfortunately, suicide is what a lot of veterans and active military turn to. Because they can't get, or they don't feel that they can get the help, the support that they need.
Well, it goes back to, if I can interrupt, Rick, it goes back to the culture that I was describing. That
exactly.
If you're on active duty and you disclose some sort of a problem like that, you know, you're putting your career at risk. You're putting your further service at risk, and there may be all sorts of pressures, peer pressure and otherwise, why that doesn't seem like a very good option. So, and you do have, and there's the culture in the military is probably more so in some services than others, where you don't whine, you don't complain, you know, you tough it out, you get through the problems, you press on, you get the job done, you get the mission done. And that is such a pervasive, all-encompassing culture that it's very difficult to expect someone that may be stuck in the ditch of depression or something to pull themselves out of it. So that's where it's really at. And So I think it was interesting when I read that article about what's going on in the Air Force. But compared to some of the other services where you have more, you know, like the Army Infantry and the Marine Corps Infantry, where you have even more of what we see in the veterans we help, you know, the combat post-traumatic stress, it's an eye-opening thing to realize that, and it's good that there is attention by command leadership, because without it, it's not going to happen. If you don't have the commanders on board, then the chances of success are even less, because there's more of the ignoring, there's more of the just pressing on and expecting people to do the same. So,
you know,
in any event.
It's what Katrina said back on her audio tape. It's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's next to impossible to really expect most service members to accept that. I think back a few years ago, Rick, we had a client, I'm not divulging any confidentialities here, but just to describe the general facts of the case, where we had an 18-year-old young man right out of high school join the Marine Corps, and he's off at boot camp, and he develops a serious ear infection, and it was the point of driving him nuts, and he wasn't getting proper care, and there was just so much, if you recall, Rick, so much peer pressure for this young man not even go to sick call. That by the time he finally got some treatment, he was really in agony, and they weren't treating it properly at all. So he felt his only recourse was to get back home and get some care. And in the military, that's AWOL. In the military, that's a crime. They can put you in jail. And he got himself better, went back to the Marine Corps. They punished him. They didn't kick him out, but then it happened again, and it happened, you know, and the second time, there was, you know, absolutely no sympathy on the Marine Corps side, and, you know, what we would view as medical malpractice, but also, as this young man had described to us, the just incredible peer pressure, which was, you know, you're a wimp, you're whatever, if you have to go to sick call, just suck it up, because this is nothing compared to what you're going to see in combat, on and on. So you can see the kind of the culture, and
I remember him, and he was, he was in very good shape. I think he was an athlete in high school.
Oh yeah, he was no He was someone that was gung ho for the Marines.
Yeah.
His father was a cop. His father was a cop and was certainly not from the environment which was you're someone that needs to be coddled or anything like that. He knew what the Marine Corps expected of him, but sometimes it was just totally screwed up.
And he wanted to be a cop. He wanted to get out of the Marines.
He wanted to serve in the Marine Corps and then ultimately become a cop like his father. But the point was, it was just a tragic case of a combination of medical malpractice, but also this culture, which was, hey, you got to suffer, that's just too bad. And I can see that to a certain extent, because they're preparing people for, you know, the worst of what can happen in this world. But at the same time, you got to take care of your own. But that's the culture. That's the culture that Katrina is facing, to kind of this like obvious recognition, like it's okay to admit that things are not okay. It's a tough thing to get around. But in any event, we're about out of time tonight, Rick.
What's unfortunate is it derails you. You know, he was a young man when he got out of the service, and it derailed his future.
Absolutely.
I mean, his dream was his dream was to be a cop. His dad was, like you said, his dad was a cop. He was around cops his entire life. He wanted to become a cop, and he figured the Marines would be the best way to kind of get some good background and training to become a cop. And then, because, as you said, because of the malpractice and the culture, that dream was derailed, and he had to ultimately go and do something that he really didn't want to do.
Yeah, exactly, because he got, quote-unquote, bad paper. He got court-martialed for the second time. He had to go AWOL to get medical care. It was a really screwed-up situation this young man was in, and it could have happened to anybody. But that's the service, and I think that, you know, that story would ring true with what a lot of people have encountered in the service, and even worse so. I mean, we live in a time now when in the service and for veterans, there's never been more awareness for PTSD. There's never been more awareness for the need for support than ever. Certainly more so than any other generation. But anyway, that's probably a good segue, Rick, if you want to take us into this coaching into care discussion, and then it's time to wrap up the show for the night.
Yes, we do have the coaching into care program. The program is to, it helps veterans who are having a difficulty time transitioning to home life. You know, as we've been finding and talking about tonight, returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. The Coaching in the Care program offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. You can give that program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. You can call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they need. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks. Well, it's time for us to go for today. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Early Law Group, and invite our listeners to become show sponsors or guests. Simply contact us. Our contact information is on our show website, which is bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. I'd like to thank our producer, BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and we invite you to tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on bbsradio.com. Hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.